This episode of the Vertical Podcast with Woj is brought to you by SeatGeek, the perfect place to buy and sell tickets. Hey everyone, special show in store for you this week. Future Hall of Famer Manu Ginobili of the San Antonio Spurs. Let's go.
Yahoo Sports presents the Vertical Podcast with Woj, taking you inside the game. Powered by digital media, find your voice. And now, your host, Adrian Wojnarowski.
Hey everyone, welcome to another edition of the Vertical Podcast with Woj. I am in Indianapolis today with four-time NBA champion, two-time NBA All-Star, sixth man of the year, Olympic gold medalist, and one of only two players to win a EuroLeague championship, an NBA championship, and Olympic gold medal, Manu Ginobili. Manu, thanks for taking the time to jump in here.
Thanks for having me.
Manu, you come back on Saturday night in San Antonio against the Kings. Thought a really severe injury that forced you to have testicular surgery. You're out a month. You thought you'd come back, play a few minutes, get back into the groove, and what happened?
I have no idea how it happened. Only 24 hours before, I thought I wasn't going to play. That I was going to play either in Indianapolis or Minneapolis. And I had a good workout, and I talked to Pop. Pop talked to me, and he looked convinced that it was time to play a few minutes. I said, man, as soon as I feel a little confident about being out there, I want to play. I always prefer playing than lifting or running on a treadmill and stuff. So I was planning on playing 10, 12 minutes, and one thing led to the other, and I had a great game, and I felt great, and I really enjoyed it.
22 points in 15 minutes. And Manu, this injury was unlike, obviously, an injury you've had, but a kind of injury nobody's really seen in basketball. You've had injuries in your career. You had pain. The knee you took to your lower section, it tested you in a way that nothing else had in your career, right?
It's so unique, something that I couldn't relate to anybody. Nobody could tell me something close to what I was going to feel or what was going to happen. And, you know, as soon as I took the hit, I thought, okay, in 5 minutes, I'll be back playing. I'll go to the locker room a little bit and it's going to come back. And the pain was getting even worse. And I couldn't bend and I couldn't walk straight. And when the doctor examined me, he told me, no, we got to go straight to the hospital. And once in the hospital, I thought, well, they're going to give me an injection, an inflammatory or something. I don't know. And after the MRI, they say, no, surgery right away. I couldn't believe it. When they told me it was going to be 4 to 6 weeks, it was just completely out of my expectations. I knew it was hurting, but not I needed a surgery. So straight from the gym, I didn't even shower. I had to go to the clinic and get surgery there and started the rehab process. But it was terrible. It was a bad, bad moment.
Manu, I think it's ironic we're visiting here in Indianapolis. I can't imagine you come through here once a year with the Spurs. And for a lot of people, the beginning of their discovery of Manu Ginobili in this country was in 2002 at the World Championships in Indianapolis, where your Argentinian team, which is really the beginning of, as they called it, the golden generation of basketball in Argentina. And we'll talk later about what your group did, but you beat the U.S. team, which was the first time anybody had beaten. I think it was the first international loss in the post-Dream Team era for the U.S., and it started them down a slide. And you guys won the silver medal here. You had some injuries, lost in the gold medal game. But you made the all-tournament team with Dirk Nowitzki, Yao Ming, and then came to the NBA that season with the Spurs. When you think back to 2002 and playing here, was this the first time you felt like you started to prove yourself against NBA players? You'd been the MVP in Europe. But you marked the beginning of something here in 2002 for your career?
Well, it was a matter of, 3 months when I got that MVP in Europe. We lost that final two, but I was starting to think, okay, if I did so well in Europe, the next step is going to the NBA. So I kind of understood that was the natural step and that I belonged, but I wasn't sure of anything. I didn't know if I could play here for 5 years, 10 years, or 15, or one, and what was going to be my role, if I was going to be able to score, or if you're just going to be a creator. But, being here with the national team and having so much success, kind of boosted my confidence to start a season with the right foot and having Pop seen me even more from close. So I knew it was going to really help me.
Manu, when you were looking at the Spurs and saying to yourself, how do I fit in there? I was talking to Steve Kerr about this the other day, and he said at the time, really, you know, Pop, listen, a lot of their offense was throwing it into Timmy, into the post. There wasn't a lot of creativity in it. Obviously, it played through Tim. That's how the team had great success. Were you uneasy about how you'd fit into that team, into that group, how your style would fit with them?
I was not confident. After the first 3 months, I was having some injuries too. I hurt my ankle in the last game in the World Championship. Came to the training camp, I wasn't feeling good, and I was playing 5 games, sit for 8, come back for 15, sit 10. So I was never able to be confident and gain playing minutes, significant playing minutes. And the times that those minutes were there, I felt like I just was just standing in the corner and waiting for something to happen. And that was driving me crazy because in Europe, I was used to a different type of game and playing pick and rolls and having the ball in my hands to close games. And here it was not even close for that to happening. So the first few months were hard. But I remember that towards the end of the rodeo trip that year, towards the end of February and in March, I started to feel more the confidence from Bob and teammates and giving me a bone here and there with a play. And I started to feel more important. And that year was incredible. We ended up winning. And I played some big minutes even in the finals. So things started to shift late in the year in that first season. But at the beginning, it wasn't easy, you know.
Was it a battle of wills initially with you and Pop about maybe you were going to have to meet somewhere in the middle?
No. There was no middle in the first 2 years. there was no middle at all. I had to meet him. Wherever he wanted to be, I had to meet him because he's not the type of guy that is going to just let you do what you think is good for the team. He's Pop, and you got to convince him slowly. And the first 2 years, we had some bad moments. I had some bad moments. He didn't. But again, slowly, he started to see what I could do and that maybe if he gave me a little more freedom, I could do more things for the team. And he started to understand that it wasn't me trying to be selfish or pulling up numbers and stuff, just playing and helping the team. I think after the second season is when we started to get to a common point in between. But the first two was more towards his side.
And there was one pass, one play, and then a moment in the locker room that did something turn there. Might have been against New Orleans. You did like a 360 pass that he felt maybe you could have just made the easy pass, got a layup. And he asked you in the locker room, what are you doing? Mm-hmm. And do you remember your response?
Yeah. I got yelled at pretty bad, and it was on the way to the locker room, and I think it was a behind-the-back something that I shouldn't have done, probably. It was too early. And he yelled at me, and I don't remember. What he says I said is that I said, that's what I do, Pop. I doubt it. I don't think I have the guts to tell Pop that, but I know that I say something like, let me be a little bit. So, yeah, he remembers it better than I do.
What did Bruce Bowen do to you early in practice in your career in San Antonio? What was it like going up against him early, who at the time was the best perimeter defender mm-hmm. in the league, maybe one of the all-time best?
Yeah. Well, it was always hard to go against him, but I had a great desire to compete, to belong, to be part of that team. And of course, he was protecting his job, and he was testing me too, to see what I could do. So, you know, there were a few practices where it was hard. There were a couple shoves and hard fouls. But it was never my way to react to hard fouls. I just, you know, stand up, keep going, and try to get fouled again. I'll eventually go to the free throw line. So I think it lasted probably a couple months. But after a while, we became good friends. We respected each other enormously. I loved playing with him. And I think he enjoyed playing with me too. So I think it was a little testing, and I'm protecting his job too, of course.
Manu, 4 NBA championships, an Olympic gold medal. I bet even sometimes you get frustrated trying to buy tickets online. Listen, most sites make it complicated, and they all try to sneak in huge fees at checkout. That's why you need to try SeatGeek. They've made it easier than ever to buy and sell sports and concert tickets. SeatGeek is the only place I ever go to look for tickets to a game or a concert. I have the SeatGeek app on my phone, and I just used it the other day for, yes, St. Bonaventure Atlantic 10 tournament tickets, Friday night in Brooklyn. I'll be there. I've got my tickets. Here's how you get your tickets to your favorite event or concert. SeatGeek has taken all the work and hassle out of shopping for those tickets. They pull all the tickets available on other sites into one place, so you have the time and you never miss a deal. You could even set alerts for upcoming events, and SeatGeek will let you know when ticket prices fall. Even better, every ticket on SeatGeek is ranked based on value, so you can immediately find underpriced tickets. And before you buy, you can use SeatGeek's detailed maps to see the view from your seat. Best of all, SeatGeek is always honest and upfront about the price. They show you the full ticket price from start to finish and never try to trick you with huge fees on the checkout page like some other sites may do. And my listeners get a $20 rebate off their first SeatGeek purchase. So to get that $20 rebate on tickets, first download the free SeatGeek app and then go to the settings tab and click add a promo code and enter promo code WOJ, W-O-J. SeatGeek will then send you $20 after you've made your first ticket purchase. So download the free SeatGeek app and enter promo code WOJ, W-O-J, today. In 99, you were the 57th overall pick in the draft. R.C. Buford had gone to a tournament in South America. I think to scout somebody else and came upon you. And he always says, listen, if I thought Mono was going to be so good, we would have taken him before 57. Do you remember how you found out you got drafted? Do you remember?
Oh, yeah, of course. I remember. It was a very unique situation. I was not expected to get drafted at all. So I didn't even know that was draft day. We were playing in a city in Brazil in the middle of the Amazon, in the middle of a jungle, and this is literal. The city is Macapá. And we were just, you know, playing some friendly games before us, the South American tournament. And one day, I wake up and the team manager came in and said, you got drafted. I said, no, come on, it's impossible. There were already some mock drafts coming and I read and nowhere my name to be seen. So I said, no, it's impossible. It's a mistake. No, you did. The Spurs drafted you and, you know, you were 57th. And that's when I started to think that it may have been right, but I didn't talk to anybody till I got back to Reggio Calabria, I think I was, and I was very, very surprised because I don't know what they saw in me. I really don't know. I wasn't prepared. Maybe you could see something, but I'm not even close to the player I used to be at 22. So, I really don't know how it happened.
Was there a point where you thought it went from, I'm not sure how I fit here, to how lucky I am that this is the place, and for me and my style and how I play, that I can be myself, that I'm going to have a career here where they can see me do what I do? Because I think there was a point where you weren't sure if anyone would ever see get the full Mono experience.
Yeah, I think it started to shift in the playoffs of 2005. A little bit earlier to also in that season, but in 05, those playoffs is where I really felt the confidence from Pop in, like, giving me the last shot or running a play for me when the team needed to score. And that for me was huge. That was what changed my head. Like, thinking, okay, I'm playing with Tim Duncan and with Tony Parker. And, you know, to win a game five in this city, he gave me the ball. And, you know, in San Antonio, even if you have the last ball, doesn't mean that you're going to shoot it. But the fact that he ran the play for me to make a decision, and trust me with that, it was huge. So after that season, my whole mindset changed. And I really came back the following season thinking that, okay, I'm one of the leaders on this team. I took different responsibility and it helped me really develop and start thinking about other things, not only convincing Pop that I could play or I could be a go-to guy. So that year was the one that changed everything.
How about convincing Tim Duncan of who you were, what you could do? Because so much still goes through Tim and always will as long as Tim's in San Antonio. How did Tim receive you?
With his usual face. I'm pretty sure it was disbelief. We didn't talk much the first 2 years. till I proved that I belonged. And then when he started to trust me and that I could give him the ball in the right way, and that when he was going to give it to me, I was going to make a good use of it. So it took a little bit, but I think it happens with everybody. I mean, we all need that when somebody new comes, even with Kawhi. We didn't know what he could do, what he could give us. And, of course, we respect everybody and we welcome everybody, but you need to earn that respect too. And that's what happened.
Manu, 06, the Dallas series, I think for all the great victories you've had, you've won 4 championships in San Antonio. You've won gold medal in the Olympics. I think because you're so hard on yourself, sometimes the losses might stay with you as vividly. There was the game 7 against the Mavericks when you guys were trying to repeat. You fouled Dirk. You were up 3. Yeah. They tie it. You end up losing the game, losing the series. What was your summer like in 06? Did that haunt you all year?
Of course, I was very tough on myself. I was coming from making a big play. We went up 3. It was in the regulation still and maybe 30 seconds. And he penetrated. I went to help Bruce and I fouled him. He made a shot. And won, tie game. We missed the shot. Overtime, we lost. I felt terrible. I really felt bad. There were guys like Michael Finley and Nick Van Exel that, you know, came for the first time. I really appreciated them, and I wanted to help them get a championship too. I thought we had the best team. You know, a game 7 like that, you know, anything could happen. It was me, the one that made the biggest mistake. But I kind of digested it after a week, 2 weeks. And then that year I had to play the World Cup in Japan. So, you know, that helps sometimes to erase some bad memories. Till a few years ago, it was probably the biggest mistake or the toughest moment in my NBA career. Of course, what happened in 2013 blew everything out away. It was a tough one. But, it didn't linger for so long. The national team helped me in that case.
Manu, in the 2000s, the great competitors you had against the Spurs at the time, those Dallas teams, the Laker, Kobe, Shaq teams, what was the greatest test for you? When you think back to that era and what team tested you in every way and that you woke up in the morning thinking about, you went to bed thinking about, was it the Lakers?
Yeah, early it was the Lakers, then the Mavs of those years. There was a moment with the Suns too. We had some great battles. We really enjoyed playing those series. It was very exciting having the opportunity to play against Steve at that level with those teams. It was a great privilege. And again, Kobe and Shaq together was amazing. In 15 years and being at a very high level with the Spurs, always fighting for championships, I got the opportunity to play against some great teams. Even the Pistons of that 2005 series were unbelievable. So, yeah, had some tough battles.
What were the individual battles? And I mean, think back to those series and the individual one-on-one matchups you had that stay with you, that you just woke up in the morning, with, whether it was Kobe at times or any of those other teams, the Suns.
The thing is that it was different because the one I had to guard usually wasn't reciprocated.
Right.
So I knew I was going to have Rajah Bell all over me every game for the 34 minutes I play against him. So I knew it was going to be like that. So I focused a lot to see what he did and try to overcome his defense. Against Kobe, of course, it was always a huge threat. The thing with him is that he was going to guard Bruce most of the times, and Bruce was going to guard him. Maybe I had 6-8 minutes of guarding Kobe, and of course it was hell. but I tried to do my best, and it wasn't like for the whole game. So the fact that I had Bruce next to me, always guarding the best opponent or the biggest threat, was a big advantage in my career too, because it helped me save legs for the offense, and it helped me to be more free to take some risks and go for steals, draw charges, even from the strong side when Pop didn't want to. But, you know, the fact that Bruce took care of the toughest opponent helped me make those plays and play better offensively.
Those years, you were going deep in the playoffs every year, playing a lot of games, and you were playing for Argentina most summers and the national team. And there were some wear and tear injuries through the years that made people think, you know, there's always that pressure between an organization and a player about how much international ball they're going to play. And players want to play and represent their country. Sometimes teams want them to rest their bodies in the off season. Would you have imagined then, given all the wear and tear, how much you were playing year round, that you'd still be playing at 38 years old?
No, not at all. After a few years here and in the national team, I heard, and a lot of people told me that I was going to be in wheelchairs at 32. I'm very glad that that didn't happen. I'm 38 and a half and still playing and still enjoying the game, and I feel like I'm helping my team. So, I never expected such a long career, and I'm enjoying it for sure.
Manu, before we go on, I want to tell our listeners about Stamps.com. Getting your mailing and shipping done can seem like a no-win situation. Going to the post office takes up valuable time in your day. Leasing a postage meter, it's expensive, with multi-year commitments and hidden fees. Fortunately, I know a better way, and that's Stamps.com. With Stamps.com, you can buy and print official U.S. postage for any letter or package right from your desk and using your own computer and printer. You can even get special postage discounts that you can't find at the post office. Plus, Stamps.com is more powerful than a postage meter at just a fraction of the cost. You can save at least 50% compared to a postage meter, and you'll avoid those time-consuming trips to the post office. When I'm working from my home office, Stamps.com saves me numerous trips into town. I don't have to find parking. I don't have to wait in line. And right now, you can sign up for Stamps.com and use my promo code WOJ for this special offer. A 4-week trial plus a $110 bonus offer that includes postage and a digital scale. So go to Stamps.com before you do anything else. Click on the microphone at the top of the homepage and type in WOJ, W-O-J. That's Stamps.com. Enter WOJ, W-O-J.
The two teams you played on, when I think back of the teams I've covered in the NBA and internationally, to me, there's two really unforgettable teams, and they, because of how long they were around. And that's the Spurs and that's the Argentina team. And your group in Argentina, I think, listen, you're going to get in the Hall of Fame individually someday, but I think your team is a Hall of Fame team. And you've seen Olympic teams, I think the 1960 American team, the Dream Team, have gone in the Hall of Fame. But what your team in Argentina did to win a gold medal, to win a world championship, and then keep playing at a high level, boy, that was a special group, wasn't it? And Luis Scola, Nocioni, Pepe Sanchez, Carlos Delfino, your mm-hmm. team, there was a lot of what you had in San Antonio of playing together, of playing the right way, that Argentina team had. Did they always remind you of each other?
Yeah. It's hard to explain how lucky I feel to have belonged to both teams because of the similarities, because of the longevity, because of the success, an extended period of success. It's not a success, we won 04. Okay, that was it. And then the team disappeared, vanished. People, you know, went somewhere else or didn't care about playing in the national team again. We won finals in 02, as you said, gold in 04. In 06, we lost the semifinals. You know, we had the shot to win it. Bronze again in 08. So in London, we had again the last possession too to get a bronze medal. So it's been an unbelievable trip, and we all enjoyed it. And one of my fondest memories is going to be related to that too. That gold medal was very unique for being Argentina. Maybe if you ask LeBron, he won it a couple of times. And if you're American, you are in a way expected to win. If you are from Argentina, you're not expected to win a gold medal. So what we accomplished that year, it was something that we'll never forget. And every time a link shows up with the gold medals hanging from on our chests or us celebrating or playing those games, the goosebumps come right away. That's something that you'll never forget. So very, very fortunate to have been part of those two unique teams.
And the group of players, you grew up, there was a group of you that grew up pretty close to each other. Right. And you grew up just outside of Buenos Aires in a seaport town there. And what's amazing to me is you talked about, when we mentioned the names, you would have thought maybe there would be another generation of great young players from Argentina to come and allow you guys to ride off into the sunset. You've had to keep playing internationally because
the next generation didn't come at an NBA level, an elite level, and so it was on you guys to keep playing. But some of you guys came in together, right? You grew up very close to each other. It was a unique thing.
Yeah. Well, I have a picture with Luis the first time we played together in 1996, so it's going to be 20 years now. Well, with Pepe Sanchez, we played together since we were 13. Montecchia was the other point guard on that team. I know him since we were little kids, with Oberto in 97, Nocioni in 98 or 99. So we've known each other for 15-plus years now, and we played so many games together, so many good moments, very tough moments that usually are those, the ones that get you together. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, we go back long time, and, you know, it just happened that we were a lot of players from the same generation in different positions that created a great team. Some other teams happen to have a few good players, maybe all guards or maybe all bigs, and they can't really get to play together that well. With us, we had point guards, shooting guards, small forwards, Scola and Oberto that were our big time bigs for a long time. So yeah, it created a great chemistry, and we enjoyed playing together, and we enjoyed spending time together. So it was a very unique thing.
When you guys got to the Olympics in 2004, the U.S. team was a mess. Whether you could see it or not, and you look back, it was not a team that had played together. It was Iverson, Marbury, and Richard Jefferson was on that team.
LeBron, Carmelo, and very young.
Very young. They were 19, and Larry Brown did not want to play him. And, of course, Pop was an assistant coach there on that team. You might have been catching the U.S. at the right time. Those superstars were young. Maybe it might have been different if they played them. Who knows? But Larry didn't want to play those guys. And maybe they weren't ready to win at that level against your team. But you remember walking into those Olympics? We'd mentioned 2002 in Indianapolis, which hit you guys hard. You probably had the best team here. Injury might have kept you from winning it. But you took the U.S. team apart in 2002. It was a different team in 2004. But do you remember walking into there and saying, this is our chance to do this?
Yeah. We were not arrogant thinking, oh, we're going to beat them. But we knew we had a chance. I mean, if we had to play them in 2012, maybe we were not that confident, or we didn't see that chance really big. But in 2002 and 2004, it was a different U.S. team. And they were not ready. They didn't figure it out what it was to play FIBA. So we used the opportunity, and we played our best game by far of the tournament when we needed it the most against the U.S. team. So I remember very vividly that game because, well, first it was the one that gave us the medal, and then it put us in a position to win the gold. So for sure I remember that game, and that team was not quite ready.
What do you remember about – you end up beating Italy for the gold medal – and the celebration at home on the same day the Argentina wins a soccer gold medal. Mm-hmm. Has there ever been a party in Argentina like that day?
Well, if there was, we missed it because we were far away. But we had a great time in Greece, for sure. It was a very special occasion for Argentina. Now it has had won a gold medal in 52 years. And on that same August 28th, I think it was in 2004, both soccer and basketball wins it. So, of course, it was a very a special occasion. But the thing is that in Argentina, the Olympic Games in soccer is not that important since it's U23 plus three guys. So, of course, whatever the Argentina national team wins is big news. But what people care about and what people can't sleep about is the World Championships. So they were happy about the gold medal in soccer, but you know, for basketball it was going to be even more special, and that both happened that year for sure made it different.
Manu, you grew up, your dad was a basketball coach, your older brothers played basketball in a country where kids played mostly soccer. Certainly that was the game. At what point, and I asked your old teammate Sean Marks about this, and when we talked a few weeks ago, and I think the same as him, you would watch these. The NBA would put on these half-hour highlight television shows all over the world of just NBA highlights. And you guys would get up at all hours of the night to watch it every week, right? That was your indoctrination into the NBA game.
Yeah. We used to, once in a while, my city was very basketball oriented. Maybe the only city in Argentina where basketball is more popular than soccer. And there were some coaches in there that once a year travel and came to the States and brought some videos of, you know, the Magic versus Larry Bird games. So we could watch them maybe 5 months later, and we couldn't believe what we were watching. Then in 1987, 1988 is where those TV shows were starting to show, maybe at midnight on a Sunday. So it was not that easy to watch them on before a school day, but we all stayed to enjoy it. And we were all amazed. We didn't know that could be done, what people were doing on the court. You know, of course, we started to learn about MJ. We already knew a little bit about Magic and Larry and Dr. J, but it was a big influence. I remember buying magazines with news from the NBA. They were Spanish, coming from Argentina, and again, 2-3 months later. And we were looking at the stat sheets and the players and who were the up-and-coming rookies, and I was 11, 12, 13 years old. And then in 1991, or the 90-91 NBA Finals, Lakers versus Bulls, it's the first time that they showed live. And I do remember those, you know, the games in the West, they were at 3 a.m., 2 a.m. In the mornings, and I was trying to stay awake, and even though I was 14. So it was a big influence, and it was a great time for the NBA to approach different parts of the world.
Your creativity as a player, Manu, you love to experiment. You love to push the limits. You still do, and people still see it. But where did that come from? Where did it come from? Was it watching Magic, putting the ball behind the back, passing through legs? All the acrobatic, the flair you had in the game, where do you think that was honed?
I have no idea. I just always played the way I thought was the most effective. Well, in some occasions when I was younger, I tried to play with that flair. Mm-hmm. But then I just always played the way I knew how to. So maybe a little soccer influence, maybe other, you know, watching different types of players. So of course, admiring the NBA players of that era. And then developing a little bit in Argentina and the final touch in Europe. So I get a mix of everything. But there's no coach or no player which I copy or listen to that particularly that made me play the way I do.
Do you feel like you changed the stereotype of maybe a non-North American player in basketball, how you played, that there was a stereotype of players coming, whether it was they were just shooters or they were just this, and that you played the game in a way, hey, guys who grew up in the city, that was what you saw from city point guards in America, who grew up in American cities. Do you think that when you came here, you changed the way people viewed an international player?
I think I was one of many. Maybe it started with Russian, what he did and what he used to do in Europe. It was just incredible. He just was here too early.
Drazen Petrovic.
Yes. Yeah. He was unbelievable. The thing is that he was, you know, in the 90s when the NBA wasn't ready yet to absorb all these international talents, but for sure he was very special. He was one of the first. Then I got here a year after Pau and Tony, that already started to change things. Mm-hmm. Dirk was more of a shooter,
right?
Not the typical shooter, of course, because he was a 7-footer. But I think it was a bunch of players that started to come that changed the perception of what an international player could do. And we started learning too and observing and trying to copy. So there was a little bit of everything.
And you think of your generation and the players who came, it was a hungry group of guys, wasn't it, to prove yourselves?
Yes, as everything. There are some guys that were very hungry, some others that were not and had to come back. In my case, I feel like the fact that it was my growth was so slow. I went from, you know, starting in Argentina, not playing much, get better, be one of the best players in Argentina, then go to second division in Italy. From second division in Italy to go to first division, but in a bad team, then to a good team. It made me like go through all the stages available. So once I was here, I was going to grab this opportunity and not let it go. I remember the first time I got to the locker room and I saw David Robinson's plate in there. Like his locker was next to me or Duncan. I said, I couldn't believe it. I was so excited. I couldn't wait to be out there practicing and giving them the ball or dunking in traffic like the way I watched those games. So I was so happy to be here. And after all I went through, that I was going to really grab the opportunity. I was really hungry and I wanted to prove myself first and then convince everybody around that I belonged.
Manu, give me a minute to talk to you about MeUndies. Whether you're wearing a suit or sweatpants, you spend almost 24 hours a day in your underwear. And generally, it is not one of the highlights of your daily existence. But MeUndies is here to change that. It's certainly done it for me. Whether I'm at home, traveling, at an arena, MeUndies has made me far more comfortable wherever I go. Every pair of MeUndies is made from sustainably sourced modal, a fabric that's twice as soft as cotton. And nothing can describe the fit and feel of MeUndies. But once you try them on, you'll understand why they're called the world's most comfortable underwear. And if you don't love your first pair of MeUndies, they're free, no questions asked. MeUndies has dozens of styles and limited edition prints to help you make a statement with your underwear, whether anyone can see them or not. And here's how you can order MeUndies. Shipping is free in the U.S. and Canada, and you can save up to $8 a pair with the MeUndies subscription plan. Get the subscription or a single pair. Get 20% off your first order when you go to MeUndies.com/Woj, W-O-J. That's MeUndies.com/Woj for 20% off your first order. MeUndies.com/Woj.
Manu, when you think about what team has meant to you, the teams that you've been a part of, you didn't just play on teams in Argentina and then your national team and with the Spurs. It's almost been more of a brotherhood, hasn't it?
Well, there are not many teams that can stay together for so long. So once you have that opportunity and you go through very highs and very lows together, that gets you together. I always say that sometimes I enjoy what the losses gives you too. The faces and the hugs and the words that we shared after losing that Dallas game or the 2013 finals. You know, that those things is like a tattoo in your skin. And that tattoo is related to Tim's tattoo and Tony's and whoever was on that team. So it's been a long time. We went through a lot of stuff. And the same with the national team. That loss in 2002 in the finals with Argentina really hurt us. Really hurt us. We were kids and it was our first opportunity in the biggest stage and we lost a world championship in the last play. We won silver, which was huge, but we were hurting. And that pain led us to be as hungry as hell in Athens 2 years later. And that allowed us to win the gold. And, you know, those things get you together. And for sure, the things that I got in common with Pepe Sanchez, as you said, Fabio Berto, Scola, Nocioni, Delfino, and all the guys, it goes deep. And even though we, you know, may never play together again, we'll, in 5 years, we'll grab a stake and we'll comment on that and we'll have those goosebumps again.
And you mentioned about the losing and how it brings a group together and then drives them forward again. When you think of that locker room in Miami after game 6, you look back and go, how did we even get back up to play game 7? Because you did get back up to play that game 7, but what do you remember about that room after the Ray Allen 3 and you lose that game? What did you look around and see that night?
Devastation. I didn't think I was going to be able to play game 7. I couldn't sleep. Of course, I didn't sleep a minute in those 2 days. I was very hard on myself. I had the worst game of the season, if not my career, on that game 6. It was the toughest, for sure, the toughest moment of my basketball career. We all knew we had another opportunity, that it was not going to be easy at all. We fought hard, but, you know, anything could happen in a game 7, and they made the shots, and we didn't. But we all knew that we lost it on game 6. So it was very hard. That dinner was, I still remember it too, the faces that hanging heads all over the place, almost crying. It was very hard because we had it.
I remember right after that game six, Pop got through that press conference fast. They rushed you guys out of the arena in Miami, and he wanted to get you together to a dinner. Let's get through this. What do you remember about what kind of talking went on that night after game six? What did Pop want to happen that night?
Just to be together, to talk a little bit about it, but just try to survive the night, regroup, and go again in 48 hours. That was basically it. But I think it's a good thing to do is to digest it together, to look at each other to our eyes and share feelings, frustrations, because the guy next to you is feeling the same thing. Maybe one more than the other because one struggled and they had a good game, but we were in it together after 10 months and we were so close. So I think it was a great thing to be together, but it doesn't mean that it was going to be enough to go back and win it. But it was a very tough one for sure.
And then after game seven, listen, for years, and I think you joke about it, I don't know how many times I had written it. That's just this is probably it for the Spurs. I think I wrote it like six or seven straight years. This could be it. And it never is. And they found ways to keep building around your group. But how do you go after that 13th season? How do you start back at the beginning? And you know, they don't put you back in the NBA finals. They don't put you back in that game six. You start in training camp again and you start in the preseason. Was there a moment with that next group where you felt like instead of this thing devastating us, it's going to fuel us? Or were you never sure?
No, I was never sure. I was not the one that say, oh, we're going to get it this time. The only moment where I thought, oh, we're going to get it this time, it was after game three in the finals. When I saw that something clicked, I think the one that drove us, that the one that was more determined this time was Pop for sure. He was a madman all year long, and he pushed us and yelled at us and screamed, and for a moment said, stop, relax for a little bit. We won 58 games. But no, he was not going to take it, and he was a beast for sure. He dragged us that year. And once we got to those finals, then our head changed too. And what happened at game three made us understand completely what had to be done, what could be done. And I, at that point, I was pretty sure.
I mean, you were so dominant in that series. You took Miami apart. You never let them breathe after, as you said, after that game three. Was it that it almost feel cathartic as these weren't close games. It was as if you took everything out on them. Is that how it felt?
Oh,
that's
yeah.
What it looked like watching.
It was. It was like, you know, when a beast is blooding and hurt and going with the last thing they had. We were so hurt from the year before that I remember every time out, every halftime, every whatever, we were up 15, we were up 20, and we were talking, take them to 25, let's take them to 30, and don't blink, keep playing. And we played every possession. It was a remarkable finals for us. It's hard to explain what we felt out there competing every possession. It was fun, and we shared the ball very well, and we all felt important. It's not that, you know, we gave the ball to Kawhi and he scored 40 and we all just watching. We all scored, we all played D, we all rebounded. It was very, very fun to be part of.
And when you look back to, somebody might say, well, the Spurs left one, maybe they left one on the table in 13. Do you look at it differently and say, we may not win in 14 if 13 doesn't happen to us?
No question. No question. The same way that happened with the Olympics. I don't know if we would have won the Olympics in 04 without losing the way we did in 02. Those are very close similarities. If that Ray Allen shot wouldn't have fall, maybe it was a completely different story the year after. So you can never tell those type of situations. What I do know is that even though at that point I wanted to disappear after losing that final, I didn't want to play again. Now, in retrospect, I see that and it made me better. It made me a better, not only player, it made me a better person. More, even more humble, maybe. I'm not sure if it's the word, but admitting that something is not always everything in your hand, that some things can happen, that maybe you did all you had and you had a bad game and, you know, whatever. But for sure, it made me better.
Did you have to be talked back after 13? Did you have to be talked back? Did it take you a while to come to a realization that you wanted to play again?
I wanted to hear it from RC or Pop. I was going to go back to Argentina the first days of July, and, you know, I think it was July 1st, and nobody called me. Say, okay. So I had to go back, and I wanted to hear it from him straight. So I called RC, we got together, and I wanted to know what he thought, if it was time to, you know, rebuild, go a different way, if they thought I didn't have it anymore. I was going to take it, of course, but I wanted to hear from him that he still needed me, that he still wanted me to be part of it. And, you know, we had a good conversation, and he expressed it to me. I believed him, so I wanted to go again.
When you were flying back to Texas and going to meet RC and Pop, were you uncertain what they were going to say to you? Were you sure they were going to tell you they wanted you back? You weren't sure?
No, I wasn't sure. I thought... But no, I wasn't sure. That's why I wanted to hear from them. I didn't want just to be signed again because I was there for 12 years or because the fans liked me or because just it was a tradition.
You wanted to know they needed
you. Yeah, I wanted to be part of it, and I wanted them to need me, to want me to win it again. So I asked him, and I don't know if he was sure or not, or he just lied to me in my face, but it worked. So whatever it was, he said it, and I told him right away that I was in.
Hey, everyone. Have you heard about performance-enhancing veggies that can help improve circulation, energy, and stamina? They exist, and at the top of their list are beets. They're loaded with dietary nitrates that boost nitric oxide levels in your body for far more energy and stamina without the crash of fake energy drinks. And while I'm not thrilled with the idea of just eating plain beets, here's why I am excited about Super Beets, the delicious circulation superfood that I drink every day. I mix it with water or a smoothie, and here's the difference. Super Beets are light dried, so the dietary nitrates are protected. It's great for healthy blood pressure and getting better circulation. You'll feel the boost of energy and stamina in as little as 20 minutes, and that's guaranteed. Plus, Super Beets now comes in black cherry flavor. So if taste was holding you back before, then now it's time to try it. Get a bonus 30-day supply free with your first order. Plus the book, Beat the Odds. That's free, and shipping is free too. It's guaranteed or your money back. Call 800-892-7289. That's 800-892-7289. Or go to WojBeats.com. That's WojBeats.com today.
You mentioned about learning from losing, and what I think people admire about your team is, listen, you see other teams lose and people start blaming. They blame the coach. Coaches blaming players. Teammates blame each other, and it tears teams apart. What happened to you in 13 might have torn other teams apart. They would have never had the fiber to come back from it. Has your San Antonio team learned as much from losing as it has from winning? Because you had big losses, two together, that it's even strengthened the fiber of your group and maybe even you as people.
Always the losses makes you learn. Gives you humility, dignity, puts you on the right place. When you win, sometimes you get too cocky. You get a little arrogant. You think that you're doing everything great and that you are the best team in the world. And that's brief. It only lasts a couple months. Then you got to go back to training camp and start from scratch, and you have a big bullseye in your chest, and you don't know what happens. But for sure, the losses and the tough ones, is the ones that give you humility and put you back where you belong and makes you learn, makes you put things in perspective too. So, of course, you don't like it when it happens, but they're useful.
Mato, you played in an era where a lot of players in the league measured success by contracts, by all-star appearances, by stats. And listen, I think you could have made more money. There were times, you know, in free agency, you might have taken a little less to stay there. You probably could have gone and chased a contract somewhere. Tony could have at different times. the values in San Antonio, I even hear with other teams about marketing, like you're marketing that player over me. They didn't market anybody with you. It was always the team. Why was your team immune from all that? Because it was going on everywhere else in the league. Was your team immune from it, or did things crop up at times that you guys dealt with, or did you never deal with those issues there?
I don't think we did. I would think that the main reason why that never happened is Pop, RC, and the way the franchise is managed. The fact that the franchise player of that type of franchise is Tim Duncan, one of the best players that ever played, and he's so unassuming and low profile and never wants attention, kind of help to see, okay, if Tim Duncan doesn't do it, what Tony Parker, 18-year-old kid from France, is going to try to do it, or me coming from Argentina is going to do it. So it all started to fit that way. Pop believes in that firmly. Franchise player is like that and believes the coach. And then everybody else just blend in, and then this culture is obtained. So it just happened. I also, regarding what you said first, believe that, you know, contracts doesn't tell who is a successful player, numbers either, but even winning sometimes. Somebody's going to tell Karl Malone that he wasn't successful, or Charles Barkley or Stockton. They are hugely successful. Sometimes it's just the opportunity didn't arose or didn't arise, and sometimes you just have another player that is better than you, or a team that is better than you, and what you're going to do? You're going to jump from a 10th floor? No, you just shake his hand and congratulate him and go back and try to be better. If you can't do it, you did your best. You competed the way you should compete. You were honest. You were a hard worker. It didn't happen. It didn't happen, but you can still be very successful.
Manu, the relationship with you, Tim, and Tony, are there days you go by and you think, someday I'm not going to get to wake up every day and come to work and see these guys? And what has it meant to your life? What has it taught you about friendship, about trust? I think even in Miami, it was hard for you to look at each other, because I think the feeling was, in winning was, yeah, I want to win, but I don't want to let that guy down. Is that what you built? Is that what you guys have with each other?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that feeling was in there, and with Pop too. Pop has such a big influence on us, and sometimes it hurts that, you know, you don't want to disappoint him either. And of course you don't want to disappoint TD and Tony after all we've been through. So that was one of the reasons why I felt so bad after those finals. So yeah, that's a big part of our commitment. Sometimes you think that, you know, if it's only me, if I was playing tennis and I lost the final of Wimbledon, okay, I'll take it. But if at the same time you fail to all your teammates and the ones that trusted you, makes it even worse. So yeah, that made it worse for sure.
Talk about the relationship with Pop, and this is a business. The NBA is a business, and there's certainly plenty of teams where coaches and players don't share much in their personal life. But with Pop, is it always felt like he was part of, it's a cliche and it's called family, but when you're together that long, it transcends basketball, doesn't it?
After 14 years, it does. And, you know, he's a special type of guy, and I'm pretty sure he wouldn't want me to say more about all this, but everybody knows how much I appreciate him. And when I say me, it's also TD, Tony, and most of the guys that have been here for a long time. So he's a very special man, and we all got better having him. And not only as a player. Again, we were not talking only about basketball players, but people. So it should be another podcast to talk about him.
My last thing, whenever you're done playing, can you imagine a scenario where you work in the league? Does the front office interest you? Does coaching interest you? Can you imagine a post-playing career like that?
It's hard to imagine it. They work a lot. They work a lot. I witnessed it with Danny Ferry first, that we played together, and then he moved to the front office. Then with Sean Marks, the coaching staff, I've been close friends with, you know, Bud, Brett Brown, Sean Marks as a coach, Ime now, Ettore, and I know how much they work too, and how much they they put aside their free time, their families, to have a 24/7 almost job. And sometimes I feel like I'm 38, I'll be 39 very soon. I feel like I want to experience something different. Maybe I do. It's not enough and I come right back. We'll see. But at the beginning, I'll try to experience something different, see a different part of the world and see how it goes.
Well, Mano, you have plenty of playing left. You have a season here that is remarkable. In any other year, all anybody would be talking about are the Spurs, and Golden State obviously has been at the clip they're at, which I think you guys love. This is perfect for you, right? Talk about them.
I really don't care.
Yeah.
Bottom line is I don't care. I do know that having 85% wins in this league is very hard. And as I said before, I can't control what they do. If they have 91%, they are unbelievable. I shake Steph's hand anytime because he deserves it. And I'll try to do my best job to beat them if the time comes. If I don't, I'll keep going with my life. I'm a little different person than I was 5, 8, 10 years ago. But if people talk a lot about them, about us, about who cares? I mean, I'm doing my job. I'm enjoying the ride. I'm having a great time. I'm still playing with with Tim, Tony, with Matt, with Boris, Patty, and I have a great team and I enjoy every game. So, yeah, I don't care what people say.
Mano, thanks for doing this.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Vertical Podcast with Woj. And remember to subscribe and listen to new and archive episodes wherever you listen to the podcast. That's the Vertical Podcast with Woj, the Vertical Podcast with JJ Redick, and the Vertical Podcast with Chris Mannix. We'd also like to take a moment to thank our sponsors, SeatGeek, Stamps.com, Superbeats, and MeUndies. We'll catch you next week.
This has been a digital media production. Find your voice. Find your voice.